Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings. Welcome to Voice of Olympus. This is Hercules Invictus, and Athena Victory will be joining us a little later on today. We've completed a year on the show already, and today we begin our second year. And this season, our third, is called The Quest for the Golden Fleece. And it is unfolding not only on the radio show, but in all our activities here in New Jersey and further afield. We have a special show tonight, and joining me are Celeste Pell and Lonnie Calvert from the Unarius Academy of Science. Greetings, Celeste. Greetings, Lonnie.
Hello.
Hello.
Greetings.
I'm very honored that Unarius, represented by both of you, is present here. As you know, I think a great deal about the Unarius Academy of Science and its teachings. So thank you very much for helping us launch our third season.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we look forward to it. You always have such thought-provoking questions for us.
Well, thank you. Tonight we're going to examine the Golden Age of Greece in the Unarian Revelations. And in my many years of reading Unarian literature and watching Unarian videos, of course, because my orientation is primarily mythic and Greek, those are the types of locations and teachings that I have the highest resonance with. And I was very happy to discover a lot of it in the Unarian teachings, both in the names of people and places and also in the actual teachings themselves. So for me, this is a phenomenally exciting show. And I know both of you are very knowledgeable. Celeste, I've had you on before, and we've corresponded for a while now. And Lonnie, you and I have corresponded in the past, and you always had answers ready. So I'm really looking forward to tonight's show. So let us begin. In the Unarian teachings, what exactly is a golden age? And Celeste, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, I would say just in general that a golden age is when there's a time period and humanity is living in peace and harmony and the civilization and their society is more spiritually biased in that every aspect of it, rather government, education, science, the arts, is moving humanity forward and is progressive in nature.
Thank you. It's an excellent answer. Lonnie, would you care to add to that?
Yeah, that religious, governmental, other forms of oppression and control of the masses, that's replaced with what she mentioned, the wisdom, creativity, the arts, etc. But also that this doesn't just happen automatically in the course of evolution. It's the result of a lot of planning and preparation on the inner planes first, and then the deliberate incarnation of archangels and many master teachers with the specific mission to move mankind forward spiritually. So it involves people learning to clear away the debris of their own past lives and allow creativity to flow. And as long as people can accept the teachings of the masters and learn and grow, then there's an incline, or in our case, a golden age.
Why do you think there's resistance to the teachings of the masters by the masses? And there always has been resistance, and that's why we're still here.
Well, because you... Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Celeste, what's wrong with you?
Okay. Well, I would say that, one, a lot of times the information that it's brought is different than the norm, and people have to think outside the box, and the natural tendency is for people to want to fit the information and have it conform to what they already know or what they already believe. They feel comfortable with that, and it can bring in elements of the unknown or fear for people. You know, and this is more people who are not spiritually conditioned or so open-minded. And also, it can threaten those that are in positions of power or control, that they feel they're going to lose that by this new information that often brings enlightenment and the ability to receive answers from one's own inner self rather than looking outside oneself for some type of leader, rather in government or religion. So we have examples, Lonnie mentioned the different higher periods of civilization or golden ages, rather in Lemuria, Atlantis, Egypt, Greece, the Far East, were brought in by more advanced beings to overshadow individuals, or rather it was Buddha or Jesus or Socrates, and these individuals had to teach in the language of the times, so to speak, to try to make it even beginning to be understandable or acceptable. And that was at times quite limiting if you think about more primitive cultures where there was no science or there weren't even printed books yet and things were passed down, you know, by a word of mouth or stories.
Thank you. That was a very thorough answer. Lonnie?
Well, I would say in the presence of masters, I mean, one of the hard things for people is ego deflation, because not that the master says, well, I'm gonna, you know, you got a too big of an ego and I'm going to prick your big ego, right? It, but it's because, you know, when you're standing next to someone who is, you know, in college and you're in kindergarten, then, you know, that's a deflation, an automatic deflation. And I think the other thing that is hard for people to accept, which the masters bring as part of the teachings, is that you have to take responsibility for whatever's happening in your life. You can't go blaming, you know, the president or your teacher or your spouse or your kids or your neighbors or your boss or whoever it is. Whatever's happening in your life, good or bad, I mean, you created it. So you have to take responsibility for that. So I think those two things causes a lot of resistance to the masters and eventually many times killing them because, you know, they didn't want to feel guilty or small or, you know, that they were doing something wrong.
And that is one of the things that I love about Unarius and why I recommend that people check out Unarius is because Unarius takes personal responsibility to a whole other level. And it's all about personal responsibility. And we live in an age where people claim victimhood and excuse all sorts of things, whereas in Unarius, one takes total responsibility for one's reality. So that is something I truly, truly admire because it is so rare.
Yeah, and it's in one sense, that's the hardest thing for people to accept. But on the other hand, that's the most freeing. I mean, that's what allows you to resolve your own problems and not be dependent on others for your health and happiness.
And that is, you're very right. That is phenomenally empowering. Getting back to the Greek Golden Age, in the Unarian teachings, what exactly was it about Greece that that flowered into a Golden Age?
Well, actually, there is information in one of our books called Crystal Mountain Cities that is a description of the development and of the inner planes that are like subplanets of the seven planes of Unarius, where souls go in between lives and in sleep state for teaching and learning. And they were talking about how Greece was set up to be a golden age, and it was the idea, so to speak, of a very advanced being that we know as Archangel Raphael, who in his most recent lifetime was Ernest Norman. And he set up this plan along with many other souls who weren't of his necessarily high development, but had more of a development, to bring forth, as we mentioned, a time period where humanity could move forward, particularly in expressing more the creative nature of humankind in the arts and the drama and the poetry and, you know, even in the architecture, everything that would reflect the inner planes and the outer, so to speak, in the civilization and help people to tune up or experience a higher state of consciousness. And this civilization was supposed to last a millennium, and of course, it's freedom of choice in the earth plane. So the war broke out between the two major states, the Spartans and the Athenians, and it cut it short. But that whole Grecian period actually was initiated on the inner planes because everything's a spirit and that's where it begins. So if one, for example, is studying Greek mythology or studying the language of Greece, you would go to one of these inner learning centers, and that's where you would initially learn that information, and then, you know, of course, that would become part of your knowledge or your life here in the physical world.
Thank you. And it's Crystal Mountain Cities?
Yes, it's called the Crystal Mountain Cities, and it's part of the Tesla Speaks series. So it's actually Tesla Speaks Volume 6, and officially it's called the Celebration of the Millennium, but all the students call it the Crystal Mountain Cities because it's
okay.
All about those. Mm-hmm.
I will definitely have to look into that. Thank you. Lonnie?
Well, kind of like in the former question, I think what the conditions that bring it about is, again, as well as what Celeste mentioned, the incarnation of many masters. So, you know, Socrates, Plato, Pythagoras, Nada, we'll be talking, I'm sure, about them later. But with their incarnation,
certainly,
and not just philosophy and art and drama, but also the Olympic Games, dance, and the sciences, too. I think when there's that peace and the wisdom of the masters, that allows it to flourish. You know.
Thank you very much. And yes, we will be getting to all of those notable personages a little later on in our exploration together.
One more thing, too, that
sure.
I thought of is, you know, you don't hear about it much or read about it in normal accounts of these masters, but there were, as far as helping the people to progress and move forward spiritually, there were numerous references to obsessions and exorcism, casting out the devils, etc., and reincarnation, like Pythagoras.
Yes.
Distinctly remembered four of his past lives. So they were teaching these higher principles.
Plato also taught about reincarnation.
Reincarnation,
although,
yeah.
A few people were very surprised by that, but right now I don't remember the exact location of it, but I used to direct people to it all the time when they said that the ancients didn't believe in reincarnation and the Pythagoras was an aberration. It's like, no, even Plato believed in that. And the myths have that information too. Like, for instance, in one of the Elysiums, which are the heavens to the ancient Greeks, if you lived three lives consecutively and earned Elysium in each life, then you could dwell in that Elysium. So that was one of the rules they had in the mythology, and that there demonstrates that they believed in past lives. And Hercules. Go ahead.
I think one of the whole points of why a master, along with his helpers, so to speak, other individuals who were developed but and would support what his plan was or her plan, and of course there's no real sex on the inner world, to help humanity, because humanity was at a low point. And I'm trying to think, what was the history before, what, 500 to 300 BC in Greece that would have necessitated advanced masters wanting to incarnate directly to try to help humanity to live a more positive, progressive life?
Around that time, Alexander was coming into power.
Okay.
And
okay.
Although Alexander used violence to unite his world, it became a time of unprecedented exchange of information. And at that time, the people in Greece, in Egypt, in Babylon, and in other learning centers discovered that even though their exoteric theology was different and their customs were different, their esoteric information was very similar. So they formulated the concept at that time that there was something called theosophia, which you can translate into theosophy, although the ancients had a different meaning for it. But they believed that there was a divine wisdom hidden behind human religions, human philosophies, and that once you got past the externals, which is what people bicker over and have wars over, beyond that, there's universal teaching that's applicable to everybody, because we're more than our culture. So that's what was going on at that time. Rome had not yet risen. Rome was still to rise. But it was at the end of the Hellenistic Age that Rome rose.
Preconditioning, the seeds had already been planted before Anaxagoras and the others that we've mentioned, Pythagoras, et cetera, incarnated.
Yeah, they were living around that time, you know, give or take a couple of hundred years. So there was definitely a lot of activity at that time over there. And esoteric information that they had at the time, too, is very similar to the teachings that you find in Unarius and other cosmically inspired teachings. So it's amazing once you study Unarius to see the ancient wisdom coming forth through the different volumes. And that is also something that very much impresses me, because I don't think that those were the influences for Unarius. I believe that Unarius came directly from the celestial realms. And yet the information is very similar to the information that mankind was given in antiquity.
Yeah, but that's something where not religion, but spiritual principles are timeless. I mean, the masters bring basically the same teachings lifetime after lifetime or civilization after civilization. It's just presented in the form that the people of that time would understand. But the principles are the same. You know, they're timeless.
Yes, they are. And some characters and places that exist in mythology, too, pop up in the Unarian revelations, like Hermes, for instance. Hermes is one of the planes of Unarius, and it's also an individual that I've encountered through the writings. And Hermes, universally throughout antiquity, was a master teacher. And he taught this esoteric information. In fact, it's called Hermetic, the teachings and so forth. And most of them have been lost to us, and a lot of them that have survived are enigmatic or they've been tampered with. But still, if you devote some time and go through them, you'll see a lot of these truths coming out at you. He's the one who said, as above, so below, as within, so without. That was one of his more famous sayings. And on Hermes the plane, in the Unarian teachings, there's a location called Aurelius.
Mm-hmm.
And that is phenomenally Grecian. And I encountered that place in my meditations long before I encountered it in the Hermes book. But in my meditations, it was called Nea Alexandria, which means the new Alexandria. And that sometimes happens with inner plane experiences.
Well, all major civilizations, whether it was in Egypt or Greece or Atlantis or later Rome, the whole concept of that civilization has to exist first in the spiritual world before it can manifest in the physical, because everything ultimately is spirit or energy. And those civilizations, the highest form of it, still exists in the inner world. And it's not just for our earth plane. There's other earth planes that also have gone through a Grecian age, or they may still be at that stage of development and be involved in a Grecian phase.
That's a very interesting, you have presented this information to me once before when I was in my Ask a Million Questions, I guess I'm still doing that to some extent, portion of my explorations, and you had said that, and I thought that was an amazing concept to contemplate, the fact that we're pale reflections of these places that are on a higher vibration, and we have these types of architectural styles and teachings and so forth because we're a reflection.
Yeah.
Lonnie?
Yeah, because it always, everything is first conceived and done on the spiritual planes before it's done in the physical planes. So, for example, you know, the Temple of Apollo in Corinth was first built in Aurelius. You mentioned Aurelius, the capital city of Hermes. So before it was built in Greece, it was built there. And thus, the builders were actually just rebuilding it, or a smaller version of the original.
And, in fact, the Greeks at the time were trying to reflect ideals, not only in the architecture, but also in their athleticism. As you mentioned, the Olympic Games, and the statuary bears a testament to the fact that, despite their flaws, the ancient Greeks were very much devoted to, you know, trying to bring forth ideal forms.
In fact, your listeners are interested in the Unarius book, The Voice of Hermes. The reader is conducted on a mini tour of the original temple on the inner planes, and the moderator gets into great detail of what things look like. So if someone doesn't have their clairvoyance developed, they can read the details in black and white.
And if you're here in northeastern New Jersey and you attend one of my frequent workshops, I think I have one or two extra copies. I'll be glad to give it to anybody who is interested in exploring this further. Now, there are other realms of Shambhala, and do they also have Grecian areas? Like, I've detected some, like I remember in the Venus book, The Voice of Venus, that resonated with me, but they were a bit more obscure than Aurelius on Hermes. The names are mostly Grecian, like, for instance, Eros and... Venus and Orion and Elysium, except for the realm of Unarius. Do they correlate?
Well, Unaria, the interesting thing about that is it's really the other way around.
Okay.
The Grecian, because everything comes from spirit, so the Grecians tuned in, or it was brought to them by the masters that lived among them, these names, and the names probably have a significance with a vibrational frequency to tune people to a higher state of consciousness. And the people took those names, and again, they may not have understood the significance of the inner planes in terms of the higher purpose of it, and they were, how do you want to say, denigrated, like Eros, what, god of love, when Eros
yes.
is really the plane of very high scientific thinking.
Scientific,
so it
yes.
wasn't that Bunerius was named, all the Shambhalas or seven planes were named after Grecian names. It's the other way around. The Grecian names were inspired from higher planes, and I believe they were degenerated into what their true understanding or meaning was.
You bring up a good point, and what I think I'll do from this point on is the higher octaves of the Grecian I'll call Olympian, because that's how they saw it too. So so these are higher vibrational, and the earthy Greece and the Grecian influences are but a pale reflection of the heavenly aspects of these teachings and so forth. Does that sound
okay.
right? Or?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lonnie?
Yep.
So... besides the masters duplicating these things or using the words, I would say, you know, some of the people who were, you know, on the inner, what we call the inner, the spiritual planes, the fourth dimension, whatever, in between incarnations on Earth, and they don't remember their lives before incarnating, thus mythical places or the homes of the gods, in mythology, would be attempts to explain fragments of memory they didn't understand or couldn't explain, or kind of like the clergy might talk about heaven or hell or God or devil or the things that they don't understand now. So, yes, it's kind of in reverse of the statement where, you know, the Greeks named their homes the homes of the gods in terms of these things they've seen on the inner. But there's also another misconception here, that on the inner planes, names and language are unnecessary. They communicate clairvoyantly. So, for example, if you want to go somewhere and you don't have to know the planet name or the street name to get directions, you know, you just think of a place and you're there instantaneously. So they only use names and language for our benefit, so we can relate to or at least partially conceive of whatever they're talking about. So... that's one thing. And then another thing, as far as words and names of places are concerned, you could look at the question from another perspective, that the seven planes that we've mentioned, you know, like Eros, et cetera, they deal with several thousand other planets besides Earth, and the people on those planets would each have their own names for each of the seven planes. So... you know, as Shakespeare said, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
Yes.
And one other thing comes to mind, too, besides serving a specific purpose, names can also signify a specific stage of spiritual evolution. So, for example, even though the seven planes were originally known as Shambhala, the new name of Unarius signifies a change or a step up. So that happened, like, with people, too, you know, like you would earn your spiritual name. So everything's always in a process of evolution and change and growth.
And it all relates back to what I said initially, is that a name has a significance in terms of everything is energy, and it would carry a certain vibrational frequency that would denote that plane and, again, attune people to that frequency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very awesome. I will be contemplating that while we take our break.
Okay.
I'm
going to
put both of you in the green room for a minute, and I will join you there as soon as we put on our music. And today our music will be Bone Poets Orchestra. You find it here. And the song is Contact Strange World, which is appropriate.
Contact, right? nice to see. Everyone needs a hand, common ground to understand. We build consensus reality. It's a strange world we're swimming through, among life. By the book into the house from them that don't. They shear us like we're frightened lambs. And it's a strange world they're tripping through. They think of sight blind is cool. What a strange world for me and you. Gotta change the rules and make them up as they count.
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Great. Greetings and welcome back. This is Hercules Invictus, and you are listening to the Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight we have Celeste Pell and Lonnie Colbert from the Unarius Academy of Science, and our topic is the Golden Age of Greece. Greetings, Celeste and Lonnie.
Greetings.
Hello.
We will move on with our exciting exploration of Unarian teachings. Now, the moderator, Ernest Norman, was incarnate during that time, and he was a very important philosopher. So I will just pass the baton on to Celeste, and she will tell us a little bit about his incarnation and activities at the time.
Well, his name was Anaxagoras, and he actually was not just a philosopher. He was introducing science to the Grecians and the concept of the atom, and very important to have science and have the explanation of the principles in a concrete form versus just philosophy. And his work was cut short. His daughter, he was married to Nada, which we'll talk about, but his work was cut short because his daughter turned on him and reported him, so to speak. And I believe, how do you say the name? Pericles?
Pericles? P-E-R-I-C-L-E-S?
Pericles.
Yeah, yes, Pericles in English, Pericles in Greece.
Yeah, kind of the father of the civilization, too. He really defended him, but Anaxagoras and his wife had to flee and go into hiding, and so his mission was cut short. Fortunately, he wasn't murdered like in other lifetimes, but he wasn't able to complete it. But he is really the father of our modern science, with the beginning of the understanding of the atom. And, of course, we know the atom is not just the small physical particle made up of neutrons and protons, and now they've made it even more divisible into even smaller particles, but is actually supported by a vortex that goes up into the fourth and higher dimension. So it's actually the endpoint for energy that's being stepped down or demodulated through this vortex into its lowest form in the third dimension.
And a lot of people don't realize that they were not primitive back then, as many believe. Flush toilets were in Crete for thousands of years. And also they had mechanical devices. They found something called the Antikythera mechanism, which is as sophisticated as a Swiss watch from this period we're talking about. And they've since found four more, not as sophisticated, but very similar. And they had coin-dispensed drink machines. They had sliding doors. They had statues that moved around in the temple. So the science was actually quite advanced. And we lost it into the Dark Age.
And when did the Minoan society exist? How does that parallel this golden era of Greece?
The Minoan society was like 3,000 years before.
Okay. Because the same thing, the moderator in one of his texts, Tempus Inter Ludium, and it's a whole little separate book within a book that we pulled out called Amid the Pyramids, and he talks about the Minoan civilization and how advanced it really was and how a lot of it didn't survive. You know, when archaeologists have unearthed things, things have deteriorated. Say, metals, or the metals have been taken and used for other purposes. And so we don't think that they were advanced, but same thing, they were very advanced.
They were even said to have a giant robot guarding the shore, Talos. In the myth. I just Googled it, and according to Wikipedia, the Minoan civilization flourished from approximately 3650 to 1400 BC.
Okay.
So
and it was definitely
a too.
Yeah, it was definitely a continuity of Atlantis as well.
I remember encountering that in one of the Atlantis books, the Return to Atlantis series, about one of the outposts was in that area, and we will get to that, and we'll return to that, actually, in the last show of Season 3. Lonnie?
Well, besides being a scientist and a metaphysician, and by the way, as far as I know, the teacher of Pericles, and under whose rule the Golden Age flourished or reached its height, but his philosophies opposed many of the popular religious beliefs of the time, which that's always risky.
Yes.
And another incarnation during this time that kind of relates to our topic of grief tonight is that the moderator incarnated, one of his incarnation was as Jesus. And it was never printed, but in one of the original Unarius audio tapes, it states that after Jesus came out of the tomb, because he did revive, I know a lot of people don't know that, but he'd come out of the tomb, that the quote was, he came forth and he went to Greece, and he was known as
Apollonius.
No, Apollonius. Apollonius. It's not the. It's not the other one. I hadn't heard it before, so I'm spelling it how I heard it, because as I said, I didn't see it printed. It was never,
okay,
as far as I know, it was never printed in Unary's book, but it was on a tape. And that was the quote, that he came forth and went to Greece and was known as Apollonius.
Okay, if you can email me at some later time the spelling, I'll check into what I know of that personage. There was somebody at around the same time that Jesus lived called Apollonius of Tyana.
But the spelling or the sound of it was different. Yeah,
it was different. Okay, well, we will research that and gain clarity on it.
Yeah, because one is Apollonius. One is Apollonius of Tyana.
Okay.
Right. And the other one is Apollonius.
Okay.
So they sound, but they're different.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
I'm not familiar with that, Lonnie, so I can't comment on it.
No, it's because I said it was never printed. It was just on an audio tape. The moderators, yeah. So anyway, I thought I would throw that in there.
Well, I appreciate it. These are interesting things to explore and learn about. And my initial foundation is through the ancient Greek material. So it's very refreshing to get a new perspective and a new understanding on this material that I've pursued and loved and is so much a part of me. Open my eyes to a new way of understanding it and reaching even higher with it. So I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, you know, when you finish all your questions of us, I've got a question for you because of all your research.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Now, in addition to Ernest Norman, the moderator, being incarnate at the time, was Uriel Ruth Norman incarnate at the time also?
Yes, she incarnated as his wife, Neda. And usually when there is going to be a plan by these higher forces for a big advancement of humankind, there is more than one advanced being. These two are called archangels, part of the actual hierarchy of Unarius, and there's four polarities. It's called a quadricentric hierarchy, Michael, Raphael, Muriel, and Uriel. And Nada was overshadowed by Uriel and Anaxagoras by Raphael. And with such great power, so to speak, coming through, it really can lift the whole frequency of people to make such a huge advancement. And she really worked toward establishing you could call it a school of beauty, but it wasn't physical beauty. It was understanding the true nature of beauty being more of a spiritual beauty coming from within and manifesting outwardly, and how women could be in that society a support to men. In other words, they wouldn't do exactly that same role as men that might require more of the physical prowess or strength, but they would complement it with what they could carry as a polarity, or you know, the opposite gender to help the men, because it takes two, so to speak, right? There has to be a balance there.
Yeah, there were such influences in ancient Greece. One were the hetera, who they were kind of thought of like mistresses, but what they encouraged men to do was to get together and think. And the society was very repressive towards women, and the hetera, however, were free to speak their mind, and they were very intelligent. And a lot of the symposia, where all the brightest minds of Greece would get together and discuss things over a feast, and these were recorded. Hetera were present. And the other is Aphrodite had a spectrum. The Greeks have three words for love. They have philia, agape, and erotas. Erotas is where we get the word erotic from, and that was basically physical love, physical relations. Then you had philia, which is like Philadelphia. It means friends. So you had like that friendship type of quality of love. And then agape was a pure unconditional love. It was love in its highest octaves. And Aphrodite, the goddess of love, part of her was Aphrodite Urania, which means heavenly Aphrodite. And that heavenly Aphrodite dealt with the types of beauty of the soul and of what is within you. It sounds like that's what you were talking about, which is something Uriel inspired.
Yes, and definitely Unarius is all about that level of infinite love, that's truly love in the sense of intelligence and compassion, that versus the personification of love that most of the people on the earth plane think of.
And I must say, Unarius does reflect that love. I have been interacting with you guys now for well over a decade, I think nearly two, although the first decade was kind of on and off. And the folks at Unarius have always been helpful. Always, always, always. And I greatly appreciate that. Lonnie?
Along the lines of what Celeste was saying about NADA, and what is your experience? Is it NADA or NADA?
I've heard it pronounced NADA, and she doesn't appear in the Greek material, but in a lot of the neo-theosophical material, I've heard it pronounced NADA. But do you pronounce it NADA?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard it both ways, so I wasn't sure. I thought maybe you might have a clarification. But anyway, whichever it was, Nada or Anita, I think what's important and relevant in our day and age, you know, with women's lib and equal rights and so on and so forth, is the different perspective that she had of, you know, woman's place and so forth. And I think it might cause some bristles on some women's next, but that they shouldn't feel bad or powerless as women, but rather to recognize that they maintain the stability of the homeland, that to create a beautiful surrounding, a harmonious home, to be demure and serving was actually powerful, and that they needed to teach their sons and husbands and fathers and so forth the value of spirit. So it was looking at that in a different way, I think, than we look at it today. You know, we tend to focus on, you know, equal rights and equal pay and all of those things and kind of competing with men.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, you know, it's the important distinction. You know, what taught was dance and grace and beauty and charm, but that it wasn't physical, as Celeste mentioned, that, you know, the important thing was making that attunement with spirit. So, you know, they weren't competing with men. They were the handmaidens of the gods, and gentle and sweet and a passive strength of spirit to their fellow men. So it was a whole different way of looking at it than we tend to look at it today of, you know, men and women. And then as far as Socrates is concerned, that inclination.
Wait, can I say something, Lonnie? It sounds like, though, you know, to fit in, so to speak, with the way civilization was, because Hercules is saying that women were really suppressed, that to come in and to try to be on the same par with men, that wouldn't have been accepted at all. So I know that Uriel, in her different incarnations, she did some things that we would say, like, for example, as Peter the Great, there was war during her regime, and you know, people that went against the state were punished. And we would say, well, why would someone that was overshadowed by a spiritual being do that? Well, there is a purpose for that, because it was a time and place that being lived in that they needed to sort of take the high road, but they still had to be part of the civilization, or it wouldn't have been accepted at all. They wouldn't have been able to move forward in their mission.
Those are good points, because the hetera did have a lot of freedom. Very many women were at that point shut up in the home, and they could only leave the home under certain circumstances, whereas the hetera, even though part of their they were like geishas, I guess you can compare them, but they had the freedom to speak, and they were valued not only for their beauty but for their intelligence. And it did, even though it still kept women in a place there was lesser than men, they had more freedom than the women who were, you know, locked up in the home and pretty much unable to enjoy society. And it was different in other city-states. Like, for instance, Sparta was very different. And there the women could fight with the men. They competed with the men in athletic competitions. I'm a Lemnian. The Lemnian was the island of the Amazons where Jason and the Argonauts landed. So those matriarchal tendencies still are strong in this day and age. When they had the march in Washington recently, all the women in my family went down there in March, so the Amazons of Lemnos. And they know they're descended from Amazons, you know. So it depended where in Greece you went. But in Athens at the time, even though Athens was in the golden age, they were very suppressive of not only women, but lower classes and so forth. So back to, I guess, Lonnie.
Yeah, and just before I continue, I want to let you know that my phone is letting me know that it's running out of juice. So when it does, if I drop out, I'm going to be calling you back on another phone, another number. Okay.
Awesome. We will miss you, and I'll let you right back in.
So anyway, you know, that was Nader and Ada that I thought was interesting. And then as far as Socrates was concerned, her lifetime as Socrates, he was spiritually independent and skeptical of the traditional institutions, and I don't know if I should or not, but he felt that he believed in immortality, but felt that the mythology about the gods was an invention of the priests and oftentimes immoral and foolish and so forth. So, you know, his mission was to teach his fellow man about the importance of knowledge of what's good for the soul, that logic leads to truth, and providing man with foreign moral ethical systems, etc. So, and then there was Apollonius of Tyana, who we talked about. I know long ago there was a class, as a class we went through a cycle with Uriel reliving this, but I really don't remember too much about it.
Okay. Yes, Socrates, when I was growing up, when people would complain in the presence of my family or the Greeks about how the Jewish people killed Jesus, The Greeks killed Socrates, so that would be the Greek response to it, that if you're going to hold all these people and their descendants guilty for killing somebody who is a being of light, well, hold us guilty because we did the same thing in antiquity with Socrates. And Socrates has always been one of my favorites because he was accounted to be the wisest man of his time. And when this was brought to his attention, he said that his wisdom consists in knowing that he really knows nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just
yeah.
like the taking responsibility, this is a freeing idea, if you can truly embrace it. Like, I know that I really know nothing. I know a bunch of information. I know what comes from inside of me, and I'm continuously navigating through this stuff, but ultimately and eventually my understanding is zero. I freely share what I find. I love discussing these things and my experiences, but I really don't know, you know, anything ultimately and eventually. So Socrates is my hero in that regard, just like Uriel in her current incarnation is Ruth Norman. She was an avatar of creative self-expression. She was not afraid of who she was, and she expressed it fully. And how can you not admire that, you know, in a world that forces you to conform and be in a cookie cutter pattern? She broke the pattern, and that too is liberating, just seeing her be herself. And Unarius is a very worthy legacy for her because you guys are very individualistic, and you have the car with a UFO on top, and you know, a lot of things to do. They're so breaking the mold that it's refreshing, because the mold is a prison of the mind, and these things break that prison.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole point of Unarius, is to teach you to develop that hookup to your higher self and to be true to yourself and follow your own inner direction, because we're a very diverse group of people. Even within Unarius, and everyone loves Unarius because there aren't rules that you have to dress like this and think like this and follow this ritual and do this at this time, that there really is freedom of expression.
Yes, I admire that as well. Lonnie, did you have anything to add?
No,
thing I admired most about Socrates is, instead of him, it sort of goes along with what you said, Hercules, that he said he knew nothing. Instead of him so-called teaching, you know, maybe standing up on the local rock and attracting people around him and espousing what he thought he knew, he stimulated people to think because
yes.
he used the Socratic method. And I really appreciate that. And, find that that's most helpful in my own trying to learn, is to try to question and to ask, well, why is this?
And unfortunately, like you said, they killed him, and he was accused of seducing the young by making them think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He taught them to disrespect the traditions and so forth.
They were the ones that were most open to him and what he was teaching.
And, of course, their voices have been stilled, and his still reverberates even now. So his death, his techniques exist through his disciple Plato, and they're with us to this day, and they're able to inspire us even now. So that is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Uriel, I encountered her incarnation as Poseidon, who the Greeks know as Poseidon, and Poseidonis was the name for Atlantis. The books, the Return to Atlantis, were very interesting, is in that you could see them from the perspective of a higher being guiding an entire civilization from its mythic beginnings until its fall. And that this process, even for a higher being, is not easy. It's very difficult. And every challenge along the way is requiring of a different response. And those books, really, it was like an epic adventure from the viewpoint of a lighted being. And I enjoyed reading the books. I enjoyed talking about the books and exploring them further on the radio. And we're going to be returning to Atlantis next year. So I'm sure with several new re-readings, I'll have more questions and we'll seek a greater understanding. Were there any other lighted beings or higher beings other than the moderator and Uriel incarnating in Greece at that time?
Well, I think the one that comes to mind for me is Herodotus, who's considered the father of modern history. And
yes.
It's interesting because he is, and his higher self, still, or again, the gender thing, Herodotus is still existent in his higher self on the inner plane and came through to channel, you just mentioned Atlantis, particularly Volume 2 of Atlantis, that is a chronology of the rise and fall of Atlantis, the three periods of Atlantis. And I have a particular affinity with Herodotus, and there have been times when I have felt I was overshadowed, like a time that I kind of gave an overview of Atlantis and how it relates to us in the present and how Atlantis will rise again. And in my studying and reading and doing that class, I really felt overshadowed by that higher soul. And then a number of years ago, before I really got involved in this type of project with Unarius, because I have an affinity for writing and editing, I had a dream, and in the dream, I was being shown by Herodotus this huge warehouse with all these piles of books, and he was telling me that this represented the Alexandrian Library, and that I had been a part in the destruction of that library, which truly had the history of Atlantis, and I'm sure even earlier civilizations, and the science that was known at that time. And that part of my responsibility in this lifetime would be helping to make sure those teachings were brought back for people to be able to study once again. And it's one of those dreams where it seems so real that even now when I talk about it, it's very still very vivid in my consciousness. And again, I have not started helping with proofing and writing for Unarius and editing for Unarius. So it was really a revelation when that happened later that, you know, it validated even more that this is a reality and this is part of my past history and an opportunity to turn around what I've done in a negative way in the past and the present.
Wow, that's powerful. Herodotus is one of my guides also, and that came about as a result of my reading Return to Atlantis. There was a question that I had, and I just said it verbally out loud, and I got an answer. And the being announced himself as Herodotus, and I had a question about the histories that always puzzled me, so I asked the question, I got an immediate answer that made sense. So he's popped in and out on occasion, and I feel him around a lot. And I know in dreams I interact, though I don't always remember the dreams. So we have a spiritual guide in common, Celeste.
Yes, we do.
And you, Lonnie, do you have any connections with Herodotus?
Probably more with Pythagoras, because he dealt a lot with music, and because of my work in music therapy, he talked about obsessions also and a lot, and some wonderful chapters, again, in the Pulse of Creation books that he comes through, and because I deal with a lot of elderly residents with senility or different mental conditions, knowing about obsessions and also how music can help. And he goes into quite a depth with that, how he learned about it and how he used it and so forth. So I really related to him. But as far as some of the other brothers that mentioned in the Unarius text and or that come through with different transmissions or chapters, Aristotle, Plato, Hippocrates, Pythagoras, as I mentioned, and they mentioned some other ones, but those are ones that I remember that actually give a transmission from the inner planes. So, again, if any of your listeners are interested in hearing from what they learned in our teaching since they made their transition from the earth plane, just check into the Pulse of Creation series, because give a lot of the transmissions, and it's wonderful. It's really wonderful to hear from them.
Yes, and that's it's great that you say that, because two of the Unaria shows this season are going to be just about the Pulse of Creation series, which is an awesome series. I've used several of the locations in guided visualizations or inner journeys, and very, very powerful results with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of them are currently teaching philosophy in the temple in Aurelius, so it's like you can continue, if you were a student of theirs in the golden age of Greece, you can continue your studies with them.
It sounds like fun. And I'm glad that your phone hasn't conked up yet.
Now, if you keep hearing the beeping, I'm hoping not.
No, I haven't heard it on this end.
It just beeped just now, so I'm glad. If you don't hear that, that's good.
No,
I'm just
going to
let
that.
It go until it stops, or until you take a break or something.
Okay, well, we're not going to take a break, and now our show has been extended. So instead of ending at 10, we can go until 10:50. So whatever time we finish, there's no rush. If you guys are available, we'll just keep going.
Okay. Fine with me.
Okay. Well, thank you. Now, at the beginning of the show, we talked about the Golden Age, and how can we consciously, because I know all of us take responsibility for our world, what type of steps can we take to make this a better world for ourselves and for others, according to the Unarian revelations?
Well, that is one of, I think, the main focuses of Unarius, is not just taking personal responsibility for your own life, but when you do that and you do overcome some of your past blocks and stuff and have more of a connection with your higher self, then you're more inspired to think about other people and what can I do to be of service. And, you know, that can be something that you do in your work. It can be something that you do in your home. But the most important thing is what you do with your consciousness, not just what you do physically. Because we're all in a connected, everything is really consciousness, or, you know, thoughts are real. So it's really important to be aware of your consciousness and to be maintaining a positive bias or balance in your consciousness. You know, we all have moments that we get upset or angry or we get in a low state, but to learn through the Unarius teachings and the tools how to be aware of your thoughts and emotions and be selective and to choose the higher state of mind, so to speak. And that positive consciousness is so very important. You know, and right now in our world, so much fear and all the negativity.
Yes.
We see all the time in the media, one can watch that, but again, you have to put it in the bigger picture perspective and say, okay, what is this reflecting about myself that I can learn from? And again, to maintain that positive consciousness, we're really echoing here, and not have a fear-based consciousness. So I think that is one of the key things that we can all be doing, and then to just be aware, and that's what Unarius is about too, that we do have a positive future and why that is, understanding the continuity of our past life history, that again, all of these lifetimes that these advanced beings came and we did make progress to the point where we worked out enough of the negative energies, particularly with those of us who are longtime students and worked out some key paths in, say, Atlantis and Lemuria, so that those energies aren't going to manifest again in the destruction of the world or a major continent. And we're seeing them out pictured now as the old energies being expended to allow the new energies of the new golden age to come about.
That is much easier said than done, as anyone who's tried to control their thoughts and be aware of their consciousness, if you've attempted it, you know that it's not easy. But it becomes easier in practice.
With practice,
and,
yep.
And you're right that you know, regardless of how calm you can maintain for most of the time, there will be times when you'll fall right back into the negativity. The trick is not to stay there. To recognize when you've fallen back in the mud and to get up and clean yourself off and just keep moving forward. Lonnie?
I think it's so important in this day and age to be aware of your thoughts and emotions and keep a lid on it a little bit until you work with it, because with Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, so if you're emotional about something and it's not just you're talking to your friends or you're stewing about it yourself, I mean, people just blurt out whatever comes into mind, and then it reaches however many thousands or millions of people.
Yes.
So taking responsibility for that as well, you know, that how your energy is affecting the world. And, I mean, you could say that before, but now it's easy to see how it really does affect the you know, you wiggle your finger or you say a couple words, you know, you tweet, and millions of people potentially can be affected by that. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you just run off at the mouth, I mean, it's easy to, you know, see with our current president and so on and so forth, you know, that's how important that is to be able to change your emotional state, have the positive tools to turn those around and not just to bury them or to say, well, you know, it's his fault, but I forgive him, which, you know, you hear a lot of these things in the New Age. Well, you know, just don't think about it or forgive them or whatever. But no, I mean, responsibility is meaning, okay, I'm at fault here, so I can't be throwing all this junk out on the internet. I mean, I need to deal with my emotions in a positive way if we're going to go forward and not just blame everybody else. So that's one thing. I think another thing is general, I mean, personal level in general, we need to balance the rise of technology with spirituality, or we're going to have Orion all over again. So
yes.
In spirituality, that's not religion. But, you know, if people can read these masters where it's not been distorted and diluted by religion, you know, which the original masters brought these teachings, and then afterwards the people that didn't understand them tried to interpret them or tried to use them for their own benefit or power, you know, and so I think by going to these original sources where the masters themselves are coming through, such as in the Pulse of Creation, but any of the Unaris books, then people can get it, you know, straight from the mouth of the masters and not have the contortions, distortions, et cetera, that happen in religion. So, again, balancing our moving forward technology with spirituality. I think that's really important to bring about our golden age here.
And studying the Gunarius materials also exposes you to the mistakes that other civilizations have made when they've reached these points and beyond. And the Gunarius Library, for those of you who don't know, is phenomenally vast. You can literally spend a lifetime exploring the Gunarius Library. And it is so vast. And again, breaking apart the mental constructs you have in your head, it spans millions of years and the furthest reaches of the universe. So Unarius truly invites you to open your mind and to, you know, let go of the fear and to go beyond. And through the information that you're exposed to, there are. Again, we don't have to make the same mistakes. We can learn from other people's mistakes. And in the Unarius literature, if you pay attention, you will. And we're in a lot of those science fiction sounding places right now in our current reality with artificial intelligence, virtual reality.
That is so true, but we know that many of the scientists of the past that were not spiritually inclined and misused the technology, which had dire consequences, say, in Atlantis, that those souls have moved forward in the evolution in between lives, and they, I'm sure there are incarnated scientists from Atlantis, etc., that are pursuing, again, we're echoing badly, that are pursuing trying to bring in new scientific inventions and stuff. They have a conscience. They're aware that we need to be concerned about the ethics or the consequences of this invention or this new knowledge. And you see that. I think there were, I can't remember, like 100 individuals that signed some type of petition from Steve Hawking to Elon Musk about the concerns of advanced robotics and what that could mean for humankind. So they couldn't have that concern unless they'd had some kind of lesson they've learned from a previous lifetime. So I have faith that there are a number of individuals, as the various brothers have said, that have incarnated at this time to help bring through in whatever profession they're in, whether it's education, the arts, healing, science, new ideas, new inventions, but they have been preconditioned and have learned from their own previous past histories that what they bring will carry a more positive bias and a more progressive use for humankind, ultimately.
The Mycons did that as a race, and they still help to this day, because in the past they were not so helpful, where they did things that adversely affected life here. Lonnie?
We have that just one quick thing I thought of. We have that example, too, from our contacts with 32 other worlds that form the Interplanetary Confederation. Uriel had these mental contacts through subchannels in 1973, and some of them really misused technology to the point where robots are about ready to take over their world, or they'd had a scientific disaster where they were radioactive surface of the planet forced them to live underground, and they were then born as mutants. And they were able, through Uriel's contact, to get help and to start using the science and use their inner connections, particularly the spiritual leaders, to turn around the misuse of technology. And so that is also a wonderful example for us.
Most certainly so. Lonnie?
Well, going back to what you were saying about the vast library of Unarius, I think another thing that's important to point out about that is not just the number of volumes, but as you read them, the way that they were designed is not just, you know, one person putting their thoughts on paper, but it's, you know, thousands of master teachers have gathered together to channel this into the books. And so they designed them to be someone who knows nothing on up to, you know, the most advanced physicist. Everybody can get something out of them. And as you read them, you know, you can read the same book, you know, 10, 20 times or more, you'll get something more out of it, because as you conceive more, the different level of that vortex of information that's coming down, condensed onto the pages of the books from all of these masters. So that's another way that it's limited or very vast, because it's not limited to the physical number of books, but the level that you're able to conceive of the information that's being presented. So that's one thing. And then another thing is, I think is really an interesting perspective, is these masters, if you think about it today, you have the archaeologists that are a lifetime to dig up some little tiny fragment of, you know, pottery or paper or information, and then spend the rest of the lifetime trying to figure out what it means and the whole scheme of things. And if you are a, you know, you revere Jesus or Socrates or Da Vinci or whoever the master is, Anaxagoras, that here you can get, again, as I was saying before, things directly from them. So the continuity of what they were teaching on Earth, I mean, and it's at your fingertips, and it's an can do it, and you don't have to go sit on a mountaintop in India to do, you know, under a guru and not eat or drink or whatever, you know. So it's just, it's been made so simple to access this information, and the hard part is just applying it in your life.
Very, very true. And it is also very, very true that if you start working within yourself, and if you're sincere in your desire to grow and to help others to grow, you will tap into that information. It's a certainty. People have been tapping into the information throughout human history.
Yeah.
And the consistency in the information, there are inconsistencies, which is to be expected, but the internal consistency in any one body of this information is scary if you think about it. You know, since it's coming through different sub-channels and over a long period of time, yet it references really well, and it gives you a very cohesive and powerful picture. So that in and of itself, I believe, is evidence that there's something more here than people's imagination.
Yes, and even with some of the consistencies, because I'm the first one to say, wait a minute, I read that in another Mimerius book, and it said this, and how come it says this here, you know, and I'll write my comments or my questions or my, you know, questions or whatever right in my pages. And what I often find is later when I reread it and I have a better understanding of it, it's like, oh, okay, now I get he was saying it or the way it was presented and why I misunderstood what it was. I'm not saying that for all of them, but I often find that's the case when I come back and reread it with more information and more wisdom from having applied the information myself. I didn't understand was because I had such a limited view of what I thought it should be or you know, how we interpreted it.
Well, there may be individual facts that aren't correct, but the basic principles are the same throughout all the text. And the important thing about that is that one has to validate those principles for oneself. So the thing that I found, I was really searching for answers when I found Unarius, and I was dealing with some really strong emotional states that I wasn't used to, so I wasn't really able to get answers. And when I came into the Unarius Center and sat down in a class, I was so uplifted mentally because of those higher energies that were being projected from the advanced masters, and I found that to be very true with reading the text. And then I knew immediately that this wasn't just written by the average Earth person, that there was truly some higher intelligence behind it, because I was so lifted mentally that I was beginning to rise above my negative state of mind to have more insight as to what was going on and to be able to get my own answers. So I think that's really one of the key things about reading the Unarius text. And then the other thing that happens is many people, when they make that connection with these higher beings through their own higher self, because they're mentally uplifted, have psychic experiences. They may see lights and see images from the psychic realms or the seven planes, and that is just, like, fantastic. A lot of people have never experienced that before. And it's really should be a normal, natural thing, but for most of us, it is not.
Yes. Now, we are here in this world now, and there is a Unarius Academy of Science to provide service to this day and age. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the mission and activity of the Unarius Academy of Science is beyond all the wonderful things you've already shared?
Well, basically, the mission of Unarius is to preserve and disseminate the teachings, and that's in all of the forms, whether it's audio recordings that have been digitized, the videos, the films, the books, the artwork, the costumes, and then to maintain our teaching center, which is our headquarters in El Cajon. And for those people that are ready for this information. We don't expect everyone to find an epiphany when discovering Unarius, and the moderator and Uriel were very aware of that they weren't trying to reach everyone, only those preconditioned souls that had learned this first on the interplanes. Otherwise, it wouldn't ring true with them, wouldn't resonate with them.
Lonnie?
So you're saying things that haven't been mentioned in prior interviews?
No. You just state your best understanding of the mission activity of the Unarius Academy of Science, because a lot has been shared in past episodes, and even in this episode, a lot of the wonderful things that you guys do have been shared. We're wrapping up now, so to leave that fresh in people's mind, that there is an opportunity to explore here and to learn something.
Yeah, well then if we're recapping, the classes are live streamed, audio, video, live streamed. I mean, we have a YouTube channel. People can check out our videos. I'm sure there's more than 100 videos on the YouTube channel. We have a Spanish website. We have one that deals with all of the planets and the spiritual leaders on those planets. I mean, there's so many ways to get more information, and it is free too. I mean, it's not like it's a nonprofit. We're not out to make money, you know, just only to keep the doors open and keep everything going. So there's a lot of free information that you can find on the website and so forth, but it's $5 donation or something. Well, you have to sign up for it now, the classes, but you can instant message and participate wherever you are in the world, which is great now. I mean, but you do, you know, if you ever in Southern California, you definitely want to make a trip to the center, because it's just a work of art, both inside and outside. There's, you know, students' original paintings and artwork and so forth. And we also have an art class that people can take on Sundays. And so there's just so many ways that you can express creatively within the center and help out with the mission, or just, you know, read a book at home. Any level that you want to take your spiritual journey on, just, you know, dipping your feet in the toe, or your toe in the water, or or jumping all the way in. And, you know, some people, it's like they walk in the door and they go, this is what I've been looking for all my life, and they move, you know, from back east here. And other times, you know, it's like, well, you know what, I've passed by this door for the last 15 years, and this is the first time I've, you know, come in. So it's like everybody's different, but there's, you know, you don't have to become a member. You can just read a book. So it's any level that you want to investigate or participate on. There's ways to do it, and they can contact, they can call or look at the website, email with questions, you know, jump on our Facebook page, you know, however you want to participate if you're interested. You know, we love questions. You tell us a question.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
we also have what we call an e-flash, where we send out an e-announcement, like, for example, we did about the interview tonight, and you can sign up for that on the homepage of our website. So, you know, people may find that interesting to do, because we let people know if we're going to be at an expo or an art gallery, or we've got a new video out, and so people can find out about the latest stuff happening with Unarius.
And I get those. They're awesome. They give you an idea of the larger world of Unarius and all the different things going on. What is the address of the website?
The main website is, of course, www.unarius.org. And we also have several other websites as well. One is interplanetaryconfederation.com, all run together as one word. One is past-lifetherapy. Let's see, is it .com or .org, Lonnie?
I don't remember.
Let
yeah.
me look it up. Half-life therapy. Let me type it in.
It has a hyphen. Past hyphen life therapy. And I'm not sure if it's .org or .com off the top. I'm not remembering. I'm looking for...
Here we go. It's past hyphen life therapy, one word, LIFETHERAPY.org.
Okay, it is .org. And we also have a Tesla, TeslaEnergy.net website that's devoted to understanding Tesla from a broader perspective, in that he was overshadowed by Archangel Michael and what he was really trying to do with his work here on the earth plane.
Yeah, Tesla is an amazing individual, and the more you study him, the more amazing he becomes. And I'm glad that people are finally aware of him and all the different
mm-hmm.
things he did. Now, before we wrap up, you said you had a question for me, Celeste?
I do. No, Lonnie.
Oh, Lonnie, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, since you've studied the subject for so long, and I've read both Voice of Eros and Voice of Hermes, it mentions, quote-unquote, the twin peaks of Copernicus that stood above the city of Athens in Greece, and also, quote-unquote, a that we are all familiar with of the twin peaks of Copernicus, unquote. And I've never heard of the story nor found any reference to it online. I found another Mount Olympus located to a Mount Lepidemnos or something like that. That's basically the same height as far as Twin Peaks are concerned. But they're on the island of Lesbos, I guess you pronounce it. And it
okay,
also
yes.
mentions the temple of Olympia, home to Zeus and the Greek gods, was supposedly on top of Mount Copernicus. So it seems like another name for Mount Olympus, but then there wasn't a, you know, Twin Peaks. So I was just wondering if you were aware of the story of the Twin Peaks of Copernicus.
No, I'm not. It might be something very obscure that I've forgotten over the years. I will look into it. There's an excellent site for anything pertaining to Greek mythology. It's thei.com or org. I'll look it up now. THEOI dot, and let me see what it is here, .com. And that has everything on Greek mythology, every single reference to every single being or monster or place or so forth. So that would be the best place to look something like that up. Olympus, there's one Mount Olympus in northern Greece. And
it's supposed to be above the city of Athens, and that there were twin peaks, and they were called Copernicus. So that, I mean, it says that we, a story that we're familiar with. And so it's like, well, I'm not familiar with it, so I thought you might be.
No, that is something I need to look up also. But in the cosmology of the ancient Greece, Olympus rises above the cloud. So it's kind of like the tree of worlds that the Norse had, or the pillars that hold up the earth and sky, or Atlas. So Olympus becomes a symbol for that. And other mountains were called Olympus. We even have a Mount Olympus here in the United States as well.
Yeah.
There's one on Mars, and there were a bunch of Mount Olympuses, even in the vicinity of the Mediterranean. So I'll have to research that, and if I find anything, I will definitely get back to you on it.
Okay.
Well, this has been an awesome episode. I apologize again for the cackling and the echoing and all the other little problems, but the information that you guys shared is totally awesome. And again, I thank you very much for it, and I look forward to the next time that you will be on.
Well, thank you.
For having us.
And you see how the energy flowed from the inner, that an hour ago my phone said that I was out of energy and it's been beeping at me, but it made it through to the end of the interview.
Well, thank you, Lonnie's phone and whoever kept it going.
I'm sure that Herodotus was overshadowing this whole interview and conversation.
I'm sure he was too, and may that continue as well.
Okay.
Thanks again for being on. I will contact you guys by email in a few minutes.
Have a
wonderful evening and joyous journeys.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the first episode of Season 3 of Voice of Olympus. There's a lot going on if you're here in northeastern New Jersey. There's still time to register for the Voyage of the Argo RPG and Argonauts of the Shamanic Realms, the UFO Entity Enigma, at the Paramus Community Education that closes on March 6th. This entire season will be themed around the Voyage of the Argo, and today we visited Greece during the Golden Age, when the Golden Mantle was above the country in Europe that we know and love. And the Oracle of Dreams will be March 16th at the Cresco Public Library, and that's part of our ongoing series of Argonauts of the Dream Realms. We will also have at the Cresco Public Library a mythic adventure, which is a prelude to the Voyage of the Argo. And on March 25th, we have at New York Makers Day, we're reintroducing science fiction with The Robot and the Ram, which will be an RPG based on the Dogs of Hades RPG system. Until next week, and hopefully you can make it to some of these events, this is Hercules Invictus signing off. I wish you all a wonderful evening and many joyous journeys.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.